Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks. Welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast. I'm here with Robin Ashley, and Ashley wishes she was at Hooters right now because the Hooters curse has been broken.
The curse
Chase
is broken.
Chase Elliott takes the Hooters car. Everybody got some wings.
Oh, is that the siren? That's the actual, that's the actual siren ringing.
Sorry.
So you have your own personal siren. That's news to me.
Just pulled up a video on my phone for you.
Oh, well, that's great.
But my dad has one that he rang on Sunday.
Fuck
so.
Yeah. I bet you that thing needed to be cleaned out before he ran it out.
Yeah.
So it was a big weekend for True Love. Big weekend for Rob, too. He made it out to New Hampshire to see some racing. So where do you want to start, folks? I mean, obviously, NASCAR was in Texas, and there was all sorts of other shit going on. So
let's just
where
start
to begin?
There. I mean, I don't think – I didn't really watch the truck race. I mean, I did. There's no not really watching. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch a lot of the Xfinity race. But from what I can tell, I don't know. Was there a bad race this weekend?
No. I mean, the Cup race was – not great, but for different reasons. But I mean, it wasn't bad. It just wasn't good.
It just seemed like everything you heard was a great story or a cool finish or wild racing, or it was just a lot of real positive shit out there
for
this weekend.
Ashley, did you watch both races too, or no?
I watched the truck race. I mean, it was just the Kyle Busch show. He won.
Yeah,
stage one, stage two in the race. So.
It can't win them all.
More
I guess,
or less was. But it was nice to see.
Kyle.
It was nice to see Kyle get a victory. I mean, he's had a rough season. And speaking of sponsors, he was the first driver to take Realtree to victory lane in a NASCAR race, which, you know, they've sponsored drivers and cars dating back to the 90s with Dave Marcus. So wild that it took them this long to get a win, but it was still very cool to see. But yeah, it was a good race. I mean, yeah, like Ashley said, it was the Kyle Busch show, but it wasn't bad. I mean, there was a lot of passing and stuff going on, so it was decent. I too didn't watch all of the Xfinity race. I was actually doing some flea market stuff on Saturday, and it had an early start to it, so I ended up listening to like half the race on the way home. But I caught the end of it, and you know, a finish that rivals the Atlanta Cup race finish with you know, Ryan Sieg and Sam Mayer battling the very last lap. It was an awesome duel. Overall, I mean, a pretty good race, but a real heartbreaker to see Sieg lose by 0.02 of a second.
Yeah,
but
he knows how to lose big, I'll tell you that. Poor guy.
It's one of those ones that it's hard to be super sad about losing, because I mean, you know, it's not like he got dumped in turn three and lost that way. I mean, he fought his ass off, and honestly,
Sam
Mayer,
raced pretty clean. Yeah,
they raced pretty clean. I mean, they only had a tiny bit of contact going into turn three, and honestly, going into turn three, it was Mayer's to lose. He already had the win pretty much wrapped up, but he got loose in three, which allowed Mayer to come underneath and battle back and almost get the victory back. But really, really good finish.
Yeah, closest non-super speedway finish in the history of NASCAR. Is it 0.01 of a second?
Yep. So this is awesome.
Even Dale Jr. was pulling for Ryan Sieg against his own driver. So
yeah. Xfinity Series, though, continually providing the best racing besides the modified tour. In the NASCAR world, there's no question about that. Which, by the way, folks, looks like the old CWWB, fucking UPN, whatever it is gonna be. They got the playoffs. So if you don't have cable, if you're just listening to this because you like the sound of our voices, you can actually, because you don't have cable, you can actually tune in and watch these races on over-the-air television for the playoffs. So that's kind of big news.
Which a bunch of people on Twitter were bitching about when that got announced, because I guess apparently CW is not accessible in certain parts of the country, maybe more remote areas, which
is that true?
Again, That's what people were saying on Twitter. I've only lived in normal cities, so I've never had that issue.
Yeah, that shit's been on my TV since I was like fucking 10 years old. So.
Yeah, but either way, I mean, there's an app for it, and I don't fucking know, man. You figure it out. Listen, it's 2024. You can watch anything you want in a million different ways. Just put a little effort into it. So,
100%.
Yeah, that'll be happening. But yeah, on to Sunday. You know, like we said, the Hooters curse has been broken. We'll get into that in a second, but. I don't know. Texas was okay. I mean, but I would say the track issues. I was shocked that Denny Hamlin was not as pissed off on Monday on his show about the track issues, because that bump in turn 3 and 4 took out a handful of drivers. The Cup cars could not make that line work, apparently. That's what Denny was saying, and guys had to like commit knowing they had a good chance of hitting that bump and crashing, and a bunch did. And
well, he's a pro. It's for the win. He knows what the stakes are.
He wishes he'd held back in retrospect. He was very clear that he's like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I knew that was probably going to happen. I did it anyway, so I should have been okay with second. But
I'm glad he did.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
I'm glad he went for it.
Well, I think we ought to start this conversation off with you, True Love. It's been a long time since Chase Elliott's been in victory lane. I guess it's not really much of a surprise. Like, he really kind of has turned it around and has been in the same league as Larson and Byron. Actually, you know, he didn't have the win, obviously, but he's been in the top five pretty much, like, what, last 4 weeks? 3 weeks? 4 weeks?
Yeah, he's been running good.
He's been there, so...
Yeah, doing good. He's been doing good in the points.
Yeah, Allen didn't bring him down for tires. Yeah. Which would have been the funniest thing he could have ever done for me. But how are you feeling on this as we're recording on a Tuesday? You still drunk? Still screaming? The siren's still blowing. I know that.
I'm feeling good. I mean, it's been 560 days since... He last won.
Do you have a chalkboard up in your room?
Has everything.
I was going to say, fuck counting the races.
Since we've started this podcast, my driver has won. It's been a year and a half since he's won.
Oh, wow. So. That's a fair point, huh?
That's tough. Wild.
Yeah. So it just felt like that's the loudest I've stood up and screamed at the end of the race ever. It just felt like this huge, weight lifted, and I was so happy for him to finally get that weight lifted.
Really thought that Polish victory lap tribute was fucking awesome. Nice heads up thought from him.
Well,
normally, after a race, you'll see fans crowd in the flag stand, but I have never seen fans line up that deep for the entire front stretch all the way down.
It's been a while.
Just rushing the fence, so that was it was a huge win.
Yeah, not a Chase Elliott fan by any stretch of the imagination. Y'all know that, but definitely cool to see him do that. And that must have felt good for you. So I had a little extra beer. I also won our fantasy league, so I got pretty lit up.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So.
So let's get into that then, because I got some stuff to say. So
the tension at this table coming from Brian right now.
That's the thing. There's no tension, and it's really not. It's not so much. I don't have any issue with Chase Elliott, and you know, I'll explain that in a sec, but. It's kind of more just like we've talked about the Hooters curse before, and to quickly go back over that for those who don't know the full story, because I told the story in a Discord and a few people didn't know this. So, you know, in 93 when Alan Quickie died, he had an entire plan laid out if anything were to happen to him while still driving, and it did, and Hooters did not agree with this plan. So, to let you guys know, Felix Abadis, owner of Sabco, he was the executor of Allen's will. They were very good friends, and Allen not having any family or anything like that, that's just how he set things up. So the plan was for Felix Abadis to more or less run the team and Hooters to stay on. And for whatever reason, Allen wanted Jimmy Hensley to get in the car. Now... Yeah. Was that the best plan? Probably not. Allen did get in that car Jimmy did get in that car in the brief period between Allen's passing and Jeff Bodine buying the team. Oddly enough, with Bojangles on the car, because Hooters, you know, immediately shit the bed there. But after that season, Hooters put their name on Loy Allen's car. Now, that was one of the sticking points with this issue with the team, is that Hooters wanted Loy Allen in the 7 car, and as per, you know, Alan's will, that wasn't going to happen. And Felix didn't want to go back in Alan's will. So, 94, Loy Allen started off the year winning the Daytona 500 pole, and that was all he did.
That was it.
I don't think he literally, I think he might have gotten the pole the next year also, but never did anything else in the sport, never accomplished anything, never won anything. Hooters went on to sponsor, I know they sponsored Rick Mast, I know they sponsored Brett Bodine. I feel like there were a couple other drivers that I missed. They did stuff in drag racing, other motorsports, never won, like for it was almost 32 years. I think it was a month shy of 32 years of Allen's last win in the car. I knew this was going to happen. I mean, when you have someone like Chase Elliott driving the car, eventually it's going to happen. I mean, it was just a matter of when, and it finally did. And I think the one thing that there are a couple things, actually. So, I obviously, I loved the Polish victory lap. I thought that was a great tribute. And then afterwards, in the post-race interview, Chase made a very he made a decision to talk about Alan. He talked about how, you know, his dad lost to Alan in 92, and now he's the one to get Hooters back to victory lane. And, you know, it was a poignant moment in that sense. But I think what's lost in all of this, and something that, for obvious reasons, you know, people in NASCAR TV aren't going to talk about, the Hooters curse was a curse because Hooters fucked over that team. And you can't say that now, and Hooters is pumping money into the sport. So they can't bring up those facts and why there was a curse to begin with. So,
Well, Chase has only got a certain amount of time in the broadcast. They got to get off so Top Fuel can get on. So.
Well, there was that too, but
post-race coverage from what I saw, other than just Twitter.
No, I mean, it was two interviews, I think, and that was it. But I have no problem with Chase being the one to do it, although I wish that it was Ryan Blaney, because I think he is the perfect, as a guy who's now marrying a Hooters girl, he should have been the guy to break the Hooters curse.
He's got skin in the game, so.
Yeah. He didn't, he only met that girl because he's best friends with Chase, and that's Chase's sponsor, so
I knew.
He met her through Chase.
That's all right. That's
I knew that was
going to
get tied together.
It's a fair point there, but so anyways, the Hooters curse is broken. It's over,
again,
and now we'll
no
see.
No post race coverage. What the fuck? Like, I don't understand how Fox can't just do it on their app or something.
Like,
didn't make
the
sense.
The most popular driver just won finally for the first time in a year and a half, and you just go straight into what was it? Bowling? I don't know.
The driver is NHRA.
Yeah, I know.
But still, you know, like, put it on FS2, like, bump whatever fucking cornhole is happening over there. Like, just put it on your website. Who cares? You got the money. There are enough people who want to see that, and I'm sure there's reasons why they don't, but come on, man. Like, this is a major sport. They spend a shit ton of money on it, and, you know, I think all of us would like to see at least some interviews that aren't on Twitter, because a lot of fans aren't as nut job esque as we are. All we got was a shot of Ross Chastain angrily walking off to his garage. That was it.
Power walking.
Yeah.
Which I'll say two things.
Yeah, I would like your opinion as a Chastain fan on that incident at the end.
Well, that's I was about to say. So I honestly, like, it was one of those deals when I saw him wreck, I was obviously pissed off. But then the couple replays we actually got to see, I don't know what the hell happened coming out of two, but he definitely clearly slowed up. So that's one of those deals where I harbor no ill will towards Byron, because he had nowhere to go. It was just a racing incident. So it wasn't like he took him out on purpose.
There's so many people, like, losing their minds saying that Byron did it on purpose so that Chase could win, but I think Chase already had it.
Yeah, Chase had it.
At that point.
Yeah. Well, you know, we talk a lot of shit about NASCAR YouTubers, but the Black Flags Matter guy, he came out and with the most succinct take on it. A broken clock is right twice a day, and this is one of those occurrences.
Yeah.
And he said, at worst or at best, Chastain would have gotten second. I don't think he could have gotten to Chase, especially with the way everyone else was losing it in out of four. I'm pretty sure that was a Chase Elliott win, no matter how you sliced it. So,
for sure.
I mean, even if he had caught him, I don't think he could have got around him unless he Chastained him.
Yeah. So. He didn't have any speed. He was already, like, Chase was already going. Like, he couldn't hold on after the first lap, and it was over with. So, no big deal. But anyways, the other thing I was going to say was, I have a theory as to why Fox decided to just, let's end the NASCAR coverage right now and just go to next week. For the second week in a row, a driver almost dropped the R word on a broadcast.
Well, that was the Xfinity race, but
still, I think NASCAR's like, you know, or Fox, like, you know what? Listen, it's been two close calls. Let's just get off the air this week and move on. But yeah, Joey Logano, after Kevin Harvick the week before, dropped one. They can't get restart right. They just yeah. immediately
restart
go to
zone.
Another word.
Which some weeks is kind of an appropriate slur if you're from the 80s and 90s like we are, but we try our best to be with the times. But it is what it is, and yeah, that was pretty funny to see him fit into the Fox crew. And both him and Harvick saying a $10 word on national television. That was very funny to me. By the way, I don't know if you guys caught the PRM broadcast at all. It was miserable as always, but Cole Custer's on there. He's pretty fun to listen to.
I will say that Chastain was in the Xfinity booth for the first time ever, and he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, he's good.
Like, for how awkward that man is in interviews, he is natural in the booth. So.
Yeah. That whole team is pretty awkward. They interviewed Phil Sturgeon on the top of his box, and it was like asking him. It's like asking him a really personal question or something.
That guy, yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, well, you know. Speaking of which, did you guys catch that thing where Kevin Harvick gets on there and he's trying to drop a cute little joke? He's like, you know, that's Ross Chastain up there having a good day. You know, his crew chief is Phil Sturgeon, and Phil surgically put him in position to be in contention for this race, to which the rest of the booth just let him hang there for about 15 minutes or 15 seconds. It felt like 15 minutes of just pure silence. Just let that joke slide off in the ether. And, you know, for as mean as he is to Boyer sometimes, I'm sure he was happy to let that one let him boil in his own lobster pot there for a second. But we'll post a video of that. Real fucking funny
dynamic in the booth.
Yeah. What else happened? Oh, Carson Hocevar got a top 10. Good for him.
Yes.
Once again, being the supreme guy over at Spire, the tip of the Spire.
Yeah, it was Spire's first top 10 finish on a non-super speedway also.
Yep.
And yeah, Corey, I think, was like maybe the first car to go a lap down. So good job.
Yeah, he was 22nd. He finished behind Larson, who went two laps down and lost a wheel in the race. So
I love how like the Corey LaJoie update has become kind of how ESPN used to always mention Dick Trickle's name on SportsCenter and where he finished. And that's our version of that. Yeah, Corey LaJoie, another lousy day for them.
Also, Hocevar is seven positions ahead of LaJoie in the points. Like,
yeah. Where did Zane end up?
Who knows?
Ahead of LaJoie, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Still, well, not a great week for him either.
People on Twitter were trying to make the comparison to, like, Trackhouse. I don't know if it was Trackhouse or Colleague, like, severely outperforming Spire and only being in the Cup Series like 2 or 3 years, as opposed to Spire being in for five. It's like, folks, you can't make those comparisons. A, financially, they didn't have the investment till the last few years. B, they've had Corey LaJoie as their fucking driver for the last four seasons. Like, of course they're not going to fucking perform. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's to me, it's more of a show of Carson Hocevar. And again, I've talked plenty of shit about him on this show, but he's managed to keep it together, and he's doing the good things that he does.
Yeah,
it got wrecked by Kyle Busch and brought out a caution at one point, Hocevar, and rebounded. So,
yeah. Also, one more thing. You guys know I'm a Kyle Larson fan. Also, didn't Ryan Preece get a top 10 out of this? Or he got shuffled back?
After he wrecked Blaney. Yeah.
Great news all around. But yeah, Kyle just losing a wheel. Just a wheel popping off after like 15 or 20 laps under green.
Yeah, very bizarre.
I've never seen that shit happen before.
Yeah. Very weird.
But a couple guys will be taking a vacation, and he rallied back to finish like 68th on the lead lap or something like that. I don't know. I was ready for him to put on a show, and he just kind of chilled.
Well, he did put on a show. I figured he would have come back, though, and
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Didn't happen. It's Texas. Passing was tough, so.
Yeah, two lucky dogs, but yeah, not the best day for the old five team, but yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, good day for old Pop, because his grandson finally got his first top 15 of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, he finished sixth. He finished sixth.
So.
Yeah, you would have thought it was a plate race, but. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I got home to watch the last stage on TV. Again, the PRM broadcast was pretty lackluster. It really shows you just how good the team they have at MRN is, and the level of experience they have over there versus And there's some experienced folks at PRN too, but for whatever reason, the cadence is just lazier and they seem to miss stuff. And I don't know. It kind of felt like I was watching television a little bit with those guys. But that's always been the case. PRN is always the lesser of the two. So hopefully they'll figure that out at some point in the next, couple weeks. I don't think they will. But I enjoyed the shit out of it. Another good race for NASCAR in the Cup Series. And I think they probably needed something like that after the Bitch Fest, after Martinsville. So.
Yeah.
So what else are we going to say about this weekend here?
Well, our dart for the week comes from the Cup world.
Yes.
Of course, that finish was pretty controversial, not just because of the whole Byron Chastain thing, but of course, Denny Hamlin. We've already talked about the move that Denny made, trying to take it high and getting loose, coming off four and hitting the bump and completely cleaning himself out. But there was a lot of people really upset about that, who kind of felt like Chase did him dirty and ran him high, which, I mean, he crowded him a little bit, but I don't really think you can call that anything but a racing incident, especially when Denny Hamlin, of all people, is agreeing that he was the one who fucked up.
Yeah.
But our dart for the week thought otherwise. It's a guy named I Have 40 Wins on Twitter, or X, and he decided to pull up that video of Chase right hooking Denny, and says, not enough people acknowledge when Chase Elliott right rear hooked Denny Hamlin at 180 miles an hour. Not to mention he did this at his peak, at the peak of the next-gen safety concerns. He honestly should have been suspended at least 1 month. And then the guy responded to him and was like, he should have been hauled off for manslaughter charges. And he's like, absolutely. It's like, listen, the reason why no one talks about it anymore is because it got fucking talked about. I tore him apart on this show for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, everyone, and he got suspended.
Yeah.
And he sucked for a while, so I think... the racing gods
suffered enough.
Yeah, hasn't Drew Love suffered enough? But yeah, real stupid. Again, everyone knows that was a dumb new move. Chase knows it was a dumb move. And if you're going to try and compare these two things, maybe Joey's talking about you, not the restart zone. So again, I always keep handing the same penalty out for people. Just go touch grass. Take a couple weeks off from NASCAR, pull your Denny shirt over your head and just, breathe deeply, waterboard yourself. I don't know. You don't get to pour Coke on your head like our boy RJ on the internet does. I don't know if you've seen this guy. Real sweet guy, definitely a giant. I don't know about sweet.
Let's just say.
Yeah.
We don't get into that on the show.
He does pour Coca-Cola on his head after races anytime something good happens to a Hendrick car, particularly Chase. And you don't get to do that for being our dart for the week.
No.
By the way, RJ, you're not listening to this, but in the off chance that you happen to hear this, just take the Coca-Colas out of the fridge like an hour before, because he looked like he froze his ass off.
Yeah. Room temp from now on, bud. Jesus. I also want to give a little DARF 2.0 award to... So after the race, apparently Chase's spotter came on the radio to Chase and relayed to him that NASCAR was pretty pissed off at him for not pulling his foot off the gas when the caution came out, which I didn't notice. And I'm sure, the wreck's behind you and you're winning for the first time in a year and a half. So,
yeah, I wouldn't call that
the first thought. But there were plenty of people calling for him to be disqualified after that. So,
yeah, that's pretty dumb.
That's just people like fucking hating Chase, which again, I'm pretty indifferent about Chase, but I didn't see anything wrong with anything about what he did on Sunday. So
no, not at all.
Oh well. But anyways, the other news from the weekend. So someone was spotted, I'm assuming flying home from Texas or maybe somewhere else, who the hell knows, but someone was spotted in an airport trying to bring one of the Cane's Chicken Tony Bredinger cardboard stand-ups on the plane with him.
Life-size cutout, probably taller than she actually is, honestly. It looked pretty big.
I will say that I've been on the lookout for one of these for Mike from First 7-Inch Club, because he is a massive Tony fan, and he does not have any Canes near him in Chicago, but unfortunately none of the Canes here in Cleveland have much as far as Tony signage. So
they've all been stolen.
That's right.
You can't keep them on the shelves.
Apparently not, as this guy was evidence of.
I just want to know if he had to buy like a a plane ticket for that because it's not fitting in the overhead. It's not fitting under the seat in front of you.
I'm sure he was doing the whole, I have a guitar, please put this up in the coat closet.
Yeah. Are you just like holding it in your lap like a baby or...
Probably.
And it's not like there's
some cuddle time with Tony.
It's not like those things are, they're not shipped that way. Like they're shipped folded. You have to unfold them and like put them up. So he could have done that, but nope, had to walk through the whole fucking airport with it.
I mean, I have seen those like weird shows with people who have like life-size sex dolls and they like take them out in public like they're...
Well, that is a much different...
girlfriends.
Oh, God. That, you're
so
going down
a... people who like, well... You know.
Well, he didn't fold her up. I mean,
exactly. It leaves questions wide open here.
And he almost made it on the plane without making it on Twitter, but fortunately for us, somebody whipped their phone out, and through the magic of the internet, we all got to experience this creepy moment. He's also kind of a Darf of the Week, honestly. We'll kind of tack him on that. Yeah.
Speaking of creepy, though, Rob, you mentioned doing some flea marketing this weekend, and you found yourself a little Jeff Gordon memento.
Oh, I did, yeah. So this Saturday, the reason why I missed the Xfinity race is my wife and I were out hitting antique stores down in Connecticut. Had a great time, bought a bunch of records. I actually did buy some cool shit. They had a bunch of, they're not World of Outlaws specific, but it's just sprint car racing calendars from the 80s and 90s. I got a couple of those, particularly one from my birth year of 1984, which was kind of cool. It's a really awesome calendar. I don't know where the fuck I'm going to hang it up down here in the basement, but I'll make room for it. And I did not actually buy the thing I'm about to talk about here, but, and I think we've talked about these statues on the show before. Mm-hmm. But it's like a pewter or like cast. I don't think it was cast. I think it was pewter.
I thought it was wood.
No, it couldn't have been wood. It's not wood. It's like, you know when your grandma would have like a duck statue or like a dog or like that old miner with the fucking lantern or whatever? Like, it's one of those. Like, whatever. It's super heavy. But this one was of Jeff Gordon. And I think we talked about an Ernie Irvin one I found at Loudon before, which just looked fucked up and wrong and not anything like Ernie. This Jeff Gordon one was... it was a whole other level. He's blonde for some reason. I said this to you guys. He looks kind of, he looks less like Jeff Gordon and more like my autistic uncle who whistles when he talks. This is what he looks like. This thing is a nightmare. I wish I could show it to everybody on the show. We're definitely going to put this in the list of photos, but wow. And this was a thing. Like, I don't know who made these back in the day. I don't know if it was an official pizza merchandise or if there was it was bootleg or what it was, but none of these
There's a whole series of them.
I have the Elliot one.
How's that one look?
He looks great. It's probably the best out of the bunch that I've seen. Yeah. From that line.
The Bobby Hamilton one you said over, Brian. Now, that one looks pretty accurate, too.
The Bobby Hamilton has a nice little hip sway that he's doing.
Yeah. the best part about this, though, is that this little statue from hell was being marketed as signed. And if you look closely at the base, there is what appears to be a Jeff Gordon signature on it, whether it's real or not. Who knows? I'm going to assume it could go either way, really.
That's not Jeff Gordon's. I'm looking at it now. That's not Jeff Gordon's signature. That's maybe autographed. Yeah, maybe the artist. That's definitely not Jeff.
Oh,
though.
I see. Well, the statue's not Jeff Gordon either. So, but I was just thinking about, imagine bringing this monstrosity up to Jeff Gordon and having him sign it. And just the terror that Jeff would feel being presented with this item.
Well, that's I mentioned that after we talked about this. Like, I think that's a new thing I want to do is find the most ridiculous, weird pieces of merch for drivers that I can and then have them sign them because I think it'd be a hilarious. Like, I'm not an autograph guy. I don't give a shit. But I think it'd be very funny. It'd be very funny to have them react to this stuff. Like I think the first thing that I thought of was a few years ago, Winter Circle put out these fish, these like 1/24th scale fish that were painted up like stock cars.
And those.
I want to get those signed. Like, I know there's a Harvick one. I know there's Bobby Labonte and Tony Stewart.
There's a nice
a few others, but I want to get one of those.
A nice space for an autograph right behind the gills too, I would imagine, you know? A lot more advertising space.
I can't wait to see you rolled up to the race and your with your shopping cart full of bubble wrapped fish and statues.
That's a good way to get banned from a garage area for life right there. But I look forward to watching that happen, and I'll be right there with you.
One of the drivers gets a cut from the gills.
Yeah.
And a sign your fish.
Oh my God!
Couple more news items.
Kenny Wallace had a visitor
Cody
at his
Ware.
House.
let's do the Cody Ware. Let's do the Cody Ware thing first. So Cody Ware's back. He's
back.
Gonna be back in the 15 car this weekend. For those who don't remember, Cody Ware was indefinitely suspended by NASCAR last year after being accused of abusing his girlfriend, and he was arrested. But somehow those charges got dropped. He's got a rich dad, so I wonder how those charges got dropped. But he's back, so we'll see what happens there.
I want to say
good news. We got BJ McLeod returning this weekend.
Yes,
yes,
that's right.
Yes,
there's that.
And he was on the Dale Jr. Download wrap-up show last week, talking about charters and driving as an independent driver now. So if you haven't listened to that, check it out, because it's not often you hear BJ interviewed, and it's a great listen. So we love BJ here. Check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yes, as Rob mentioned, Kenny Wallace had a visitor yesterday.
He
posted this video where the caption was, "Strange man walks into my house, craziest shit you ever seen." And then he proceeds to interview the guy who... Yeah. This guy's like same age as Kenny, apparently, like sort of lived in the same area Kenny grew up in, and he claimed that he Googled Kenny's address, which is a thing. I have done this when I've sold stuff to a few well-known drivers, and I wanted to double check and make sure it was actually them. And you can find most drivers' addresses if you Google them, which is creepy, but it's out there.
Yep.
So this guy apparently just walked up to Kenny's house, and Kenny said he just opened the door and walked in, which is fucking insane behavior.
The door was open because the dogs were out.
Yeah, the door was already open. Okay. But still, just to walk into someone's open front door in their home unannounced.
I would at least knock first. Like, hey.
Yeah.
The reveal was so funny. Because it starts off like a typical Kenny Wallace video. How y'all doing?
His couch,
it's Herman. You know, craziest thing happened to me. And then he just pans around and the guy's just still sitting there, which I'm sure he did as a nice way to make sure that if he got like eaten alive or something, that there would be video evidence on the internet of this happening. But
turn into a Kenny Wallace lampshade.
Like an episode of Fargo. Yeah.
So Kenny, I'll say this. Like, it isn't totally unsurprising that Kenny reacted this way, but it actually is a little surprising, because I've said this in the past. There's some times when you look at Kenny Wallace and he's having his moments on Twitter where he's just spouting off a bunch of bullshit and swearing a bunch. And to me, sometimes when I look at him smiling, I see just a little bit of darkness behind that smile. And like,
of course you would.
In my head, I can picture.
Big fucking surprise, Brian.
Listen, Kenny, before, when Kenny was just getting too political and just saying some really out there shit, that's when I felt like it was a little bit iffy with Kenny. But now he's
turned it around.
A hero, but
just let him in the house.
I don't know if I would have reacted that way.
Oh, there's no fucking chance I would have reacted that way. But yeah, good for him playing it cool.
So,
make sure you screenshot that guy's face in case Kenny ends up, for sale on eBay or something. Turned into one of those little statues.
Well, hey, he said his name, he's his business, so he's...
Yeah. we'll close it out with this. If you're listening to this and you want to meet a driver,
well,
don't go to their fucking house unannounced. Don't do that. Please, don't. Bring them a statue to sign, or a fish, or whatever the fuck else. That's somehow okay. Bring them the cardboard cutout you stole from a chicken restaurant. But just don't go to their house unless they ask you to come over, which they won't. So
they won't.
It's not going to happen. So just don't do it, please.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, on to that.
Brian's deleting Ross Chastain's address from his search history as we speak. yeah, guys, yeah.
Stop it. It's time for the short track septic tank, and Rob can start this off with his trip to New Hampshire. So, Rob,
that's
take it away.
Right.
Big old fat septic tank this week.
It is a fat septic tank. There was so much racing this weekend, and so much of it was good. Particularly up at Loudoun. I went up to the Northeast Classic at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. It's the first event of the year for the American Canadian Tour. It's one of the first events in New England that opens up. And it's always a little cold, which is fine. Sunday was actually really nice for the first half, especially, like, it's kind of funny. Like, when you show up to Loudon for a cup weekend, it's just like it would be at any other racetrack. There's miles and miles of campers and whatever. This was almost as if the American Canadian Tour just snuck into the racetrack. No bathrooms were open. They don't open the bathrooms up because the water would freeze over the winter, and sometimes it's still pretty cold, and they have to cancel it outright. So they're not prepared to actually open the facilities for that same reason. No concession stands are open. There's like one chicken tender truck that had a line that wrapped around so far. It was crazy. So if you didn't bring your own food, you were kind of fucked. They had a hot dog stand. They had to like cart hot dogs in from the infield cafe. And people were waiting like 20 minutes to get a hot dog out of this. So yeah, if you ever go to this event, which you should, by the way, because the racing was fucking incredible through and through. There wasn't a bad race out of the entire bunch. But yeah, make sure you bring your own like beef jerky or something, you know, because Jesus Christ. Seriously, it felt like you snuck into a racetrack. But nice weather. They moved it back to Sunday from Saturday to avoid some rain. They further moved it up a full hour in the day. So racing started at 10 o'clock instead of 11, which was perfect because as soon as the American Canadian Tour feature wrapped up, the skies opened up. So it was excellent timing. Got the full show in. It was fucking awesome. Me and the boys from These Wild Plains went up there and had us a nice time. And again, some of the best racing I've seen in a while, particularly from the modified end of things. The show kicked off with the Pass Tour and an Eddie McDonald just complete dick stomping. If there were any round penises at the beginning of the race, they were all flattened out completely. Just complete ass whooping, which is exactly what you'd expect from Eddie Mac. He's a legend up here, and that's why. DJ Shaw tried to take it to him a little bit, and yeah, but just didn't quite have it. So that was cool. The 50-lap open modified feature. Only 17 cars showed up, which is kind of a bummer, but I guess everyone's saving their shit for Stafford. And if you wreck here, it's kind of a common theme of the day. There's a lot of wrecks at this place. You're seeing a lot of touring series and smaller, like, local series come to this thing, and they're used to racing on quarter miles. Like, Thompson's, like, the big track, right? That's just over half a mile. This is a full mile and change, and these guys are hauling ass. So if you wreck your car in what's essentially the first event of the year, as hard as you do at Loudon, you're kind of fucked. And there's a lot of guys who are fucked as a result of this weekend. And a lot of people just won't come for that reason. So again, 17 modified showed up. Not a great number, but the quality of the field was fucking insane. Doug Kobe was there in the Tenio 44. It's always great to see that car out there. John McKennedy was out there. Austin Beers. Ronnie Williams. Woody Pitcat. Like, I don't know who else you really want to see at a race. Like, no offense to the Smart Tour, this is the most talented group of drivers and cars in the United States behind the wheel of a modified. There's no question about it. Anthony Nocella, who ended up winning the race, he was also there. Obviously, they don't hand those ones out for not showing up. So, well, one of the best modified races I've ever seen in my life. That is until the 604 modifieds came out. They only had six cars in that feature. And I thought this is just going to be the most bullshit, you know, 20 laps of just guys in a line. And they were side by side, three wide the entire time, the entire field. There wasn't a person sitting down for most of that feature. It was fucking nuts. I hope there are, I don't know if they'll show highlights of this because there are so few cars, but man, what a fucking show that was. Danny Cates winning that in the 604 mods. Good for him. American Canadian Tour race was good. Derek Glashocki with the Alan Kowicki driver development program sticker on the side was dick stomping everybody too up until the very end when Jesse Swister got around him on a restart. That was the end of the day for him. And then Ryan Waterman getting a win in the street stocks. He was second for the entire feature, pretty much. He kind of jumped the restart and got a giant lead, and he got chased down by, I forget who it was, but he blew a motor with two laps to go. So Ryan just pedaled right around him and got the win. But all in all, an incredible day at the racetrack. Again, we had they opened the entire grandstand, so you could just sit wherever the fuck you wanted. So it was just you and your friends being as loud and obnoxious as you wanted to be. It was a great time. And I recommend going to that event. Again, I don't know how long they're going to do this because cars get torn up so much, but hey, you know, they're all adults. Everyone knows how dangerous it is. I'm just glad we didn't see anybody get hurt too bad out of this whole deal. But that was Sunday. So I didn't expect Texas to be any better than anything I saw, but it ended up being all right. Speaking of other modifieds, Carson Lofton got his fourth win of the year at Hickory in the Smart Tour. Big fucking surprise there. Teenager whooping their asses. Everyone loves to see that. Dale Jr. ran the cars race. How about that?
Oh, yeah.
I actually don't know who won that.
It was like a lifetime ago. Did Quapa win that? No.
Probably. Carson Quapa. We'll give it to him. tour of the Dirt World, the Illinois 100 at Farmer's City. Those are Dirt Late Models, the World of Outlaws tour. Friday night was one of the best features I've ever seen in my life. We'll post the highlight of this as well. Nick Hoffman nipped Bobby Pierce at the line. Well, Hoffman actually had it in hand, and he kind of got crossed up, and Pierce dove underneath him. And Hoffman won this thing on the other side of the cushion. Just about as close as a finish as we saw on Saturday in the Xfinity race. It was fucking incredible.
That was a wild finish.
Yeah.
Bobby McCarty won the Cars Tour race.
McCarty, that's it.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Bobby. Sorry to give that to Carson. but Bobby Pierce, you know, for as good as the show Friday night was, and Saturday night at Illinois 100 was good, but Bobby wasn't going to let himself lose again, and he won by like 15 seconds, so not quite as exciting as Friday night. meanwhile, over in the Lucas Oil side of things, in the Midwest division, Jonathan Davenport swept the weekend at Lucas Oil, and some late news I got here. I think we all kind of knew about this, but I just saw the Dirt Tracker daily video posted, which reminded me of this. Unfortunately, Pennsboro is completely flooded out.
And they
can't do a lot of work on it. So there's I don't know if this is dirt late model people just bitching about it, as short track fans like to do, or if there's actually an issue, but a giant roadblock thrown into the progress of that track. Brian, you might have some more information on this.
Yeah, so what happened was that part of West Virginia just has been experiencing crazy rains the last few weeks, and that's why the track flooded. And for those who know Pennsboro, it's not like this has never happened before. Yeah. And I think
there's a creek
already
that runs
has
to the middle of the track.
Yeah. I think the water's already down. So I don't know if there's still going to be any issues with Memorial Day weekend. I haven't really heard many updates about that. I mean, it seems like they're making progress.
Yeah, get down there and get your snowblower.
My new snowblower over clean the track.
Slink some mud out of there.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, I recommend watching the Dirt Tracker video. I haven't watched that yet. By the way, Dirt Tracker Daily is the best source for dirt news that I can find. It's like a 8-minute video every day that keeps you kind of tied into what's going on. And there's a lot of racing, and it's tough to keep tabs on all this. He does a much better job than I do, I can tell you that. So give him a follow. Dirt Tracker, I don't think there's any vowels except for the I in dirt in that. But he's pretty easy to find. Great guy, and great program he puts on. You can find that on YouTube or wherever your favorite podcasts are streaming for you. Over in the sprint car world, High Limit was happening over the weekend. Anthony Macri got a big win at Texas Motor Speedway. By the way, that kind of really knocks Texas a lot higher up in my list of tracks to go to, because much like Charlotte, they have a nice little dirt oval behind the facility, and they packed the place out for Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet's High Limit series. And Anthony Macri definitely go ahead.
What you're telling me is Dale Jr. running the cars race didn't affect the High Limit race at all. That's what you're saying, right?
No, it did not. Yeah, because they're very fucking far apart.
just making sure. Just making sure.
Yeah, but Anthony Macri definitely happy to have made amends with his dad and to be driving the family car again, because he went out there and won pretty convincingly. I don't even know what happened to World Outlaws, to be honest with you. I didn't put any notes down for that.
Unfortunately, we did not see any short track action. At least I didn't this weekend, because our secret link is no longer working.
Yeah.
Much like the last time the link shit the bed, I'm almost sure wrestling fans caused this, because that site has links to pretty much any major sporting event going on. And last weekend was WrestleMania, and after the weekend, the site didn't work. So it comes back up. We will let you guys know, because a few people asked me for the link, and I had to disappoint them.
Yeah, there's a lot of disappointment this weekend. But yeah, hopefully it comes back. And again, if it does not, thank you to to our buddy who put that on. I don't know him personally, but he's definitely a friend, whether he knows it or not. We've been able to share the magic of short track racing through this to a lot of people, and a lot of folks listening to this now know what we're talking about versus not being able to know what we were talking about beforehand. So hopefully it comes back. That said, I think we might be getting a special little Racing America code for you guys if you want to watch some late model racing coming up. I might have a code for subscription, a little percentage off there coming up. I'm going to talk to our good buddy about that and see if we can make that happen, so at least you can watch some of the pavement stuff out there. And they put on some good shows over on Racing America. Let's see. I think we're getting to the goofy shit here now. I don't know if you saw Jacob Allen and Gio Selzy going at each other on the internet, and Jacob Allen keeps calling Gio Toucan Sam, which is really funny because he's got a pretty big nose. At least that's what I got out of it. But Gio did ask for it, so and apparently he can't take a nice hearty ribbon from a good old boy like Jacob Allen, who I'm definitely pulling for. By the way, High Limit is racing tonight. Obviously, you're not going to be able to know that because it's a Tuesday and this comes out on a Wednesday, but if you have the magic of time travel, High Limit is running as well on Tuesday night, a nice little Tuesday night show. Kyle Larson will be there for all the NASCAR fans. The funniest thing coming out of the dirt world, though, is it was a USAC race. Robert Ballou, always fun to watch him get angry at people. He's got quite the temper, and this week he took it out on a tow truck driver. He's getting hauled behind the wall after flipping, and he's convinced the tow truck driver is causing more damage to his car. I think most of it was actually done when he actually wrecked, but he hops out of the car and proceeds to try and whip this guy's ass. It's really funny. Vintage Robert Ballou. And then the day after he posted on the internet, he was taking a nice little motorcycle ride and gave everybody a good God bless. So I guess water under the bridge, right? We'll post that as well. And one last bit before we flush the tank down here. Pretty close to you, Brian.
Actually, no. Let me say one thing. I actually do have one little bit of short track news. So I am in a group on Facebook called the Hard Clay After Hours, which is kind of more of a, it seems like a dirt track shit posting type group. And
invite me.
There's a guy in this group that he has it out for Brett Hearn. So Brett Hearn has taken over. Oh, hello?
Who doesn't? Yeah. Who doesn't have it out for Brett Hearn?
I think Rob.
Oh, okay.
You're correct.
Brett Hearn, I guess, has been in charge of Orange County Fairgrounds Speedway the last few years as far as promoting and stuff. And even though everybody else in the group disagrees with this guy, there is one particular guy that just, he blames every single issue with that track on Brett. And apparently the track, like, might be losing racing soon. They just announced a few special event dates, but this guy blames Brett Hearn for it, and he thinks former drivers shouldn't be track promoters. So if anybody has some more concrete details about that, feel free to send them to me, because I'm interested in that story.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen. That would be a shame to see that place.
But yeah, that's my little short track thing.
But close enough to you.
That part of New York,
I mean, there's a lot of racing up there.
That part of New York has lost a lot of tracks.
Yeah, a lot of fairground kind of stuff, too, and those fair boards are always tough. And I don't know. It sucks to see these places close. So hopefully that doesn't come to fruition. But, yeah, a lot of people love to hate on Brett Hearn. It's just kind of fun at this point.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is his fault. One last little piece, though. And, Brian, you could actually feasibly make it to this event. Just down the road in Lawrenceburg Speedway coming up. What's the day here? This is sent to us by friend of the program, J.D. Ellis. There's a group called the Dayton Auto Race Fans. They've been around a long time, and I think they do sell T-shirts, and I might have to pick one up. But Lawrenceburg is hosting the Dayton Auto Race Fans Night at the Berg, which, if you guys haven't put together what that acronym spells out, it's DARF. So we're having DARF Night at Lawrenceburg coming up here.
And Brian refuses to go.
He refuses to go. Yeah.
Well, listen, it's Dayton, first off, it's in Dayton. Dayton sucks, and it's 3 hours away. Fremont is only an hour away, and I'd much rather go to that. Now, it's supposed to be in the 50s on Saturday night again, of course, so we'll see if I actually make it there. But that is my plan as of right now. I will not be going to Dayton. I plan on going to Fremont.
That's fair. But if you're in Lawrenceburg this Saturday, go on by. It's DARF night. Bring your fucking pewter statue with you, and your Tony Bredinger. And buy us some T-shirts, please. That's the short track septic tank, and we're going to go ahead and flush her on down. Whoosh. Unlike you couldn't do it Loudon because there were no toilets available, just porta potties. So we're going to piss the septic tank all over the side of a porta potty here today instead, in honor of Loudon, which, again, by the way, if you're ever in New England at the time, go up there. It's cool to see that place run a series that's not NASCAR. I'll say that.
Yeah. So with that, it's time for the video week, and we had two videos this week, both of which relating to Talladega, although the first one really doesn't relate much to Talladega. It's almost a bit of a clickbait issue, but the first one was about the USAC versus CART split that happened in the 1979-1980. Mm-hmm. Really, this was starts off talking about how Indy was supposed to run at Talladega in 1980, and you know, they show testing footage of A.J. Foyt, who ran a few times there with you know, a closed track testing type situation, and
running
the race
laps
never happened. And then
what was the lap? It was 217 or 220. I can't remember exactly what it was.
It was around 225.
But this was in the days where they were still qualifying under 200 at Indianapolis, just to give you an idea how fast AJ was hauling the mail around that place.
Yeah. But it never happened because there was a massive falling out between USAC and CART. And in this story, I mean, Rob probably knows more than either of us. He's the IndyCar guy in here, so I'm sure he'll have some more insight on this. But
yes.
This was all over my head.
So basically what happened was USAC was more or less the sanctioning... USAC was more or less the sanctioning body for IndyCar throughout the 70s. And in the late 70s, teams were switching over from traditional four-cylinder engines to Cosworth V8s, mm-hmm. Which was an issue. And USAC was trying to restrict the motors, which led to the formation of CART, which was... Roger Penske, let me see the names here. Roger Penske, Dan Gurney, and Jim Hall?
Jim Hall. Pat Patrick was involved as well. Team McLaren from back in the day was also involved in this.
Yes. So, you know, what happened was these guys split off and they wanted to start their own racing series. And they teamed up with SCCA. However... USAC still held the rights to Indianapolis and the Indy 500. So as an IndyCar series, you know, it's you couldn't lose that race. So they kind of had to battle over which drivers and which cars ran which races and things like that. Another thing that complicated the issue at hand was in 1979, Tony Hullman, who was the IMS manager, track operator, whatever you want to call it.
Ran the fucking
place. He was in charge of IMS. He died. And then around that same time, there was a plane crash where a bunch of USAC officials were killed. So that really complicated the process as far as figuring all this shit out. And it really led to Pocono kind of being a breaking point. So what happened was, let's see. Oh Jesus Christ! There's so many notes. I took so many notes for this 15-minute video.
Well, it's such a fascinating
that Rob, let's step in here and help me out a little bit with the timeline.
Sure. Well, as Brian said, USAC and CART kind of went back and forth. And CART was originally formed as sort of a drivers' union, which may sound familiar to NASCAR fans of now, or Formula One fans. Mm-hmm. They were looking at the Formula One Drivers Association. I forget exactly what the acronym is off the top of my head, but they were kind of leaning on them for inspiration. Of course, Bill France Sr., who had tamped down his own unionization attempts earlier, based over tires and shit like that, when they were trying to run at Talladega and they were trying not to kill people and drivers didn't want to run on an unsafe tire. There were threats of unionization in NASCAR, and Bill France tamped that down real quick. So he kind of took to the USAC side of things as he saw this as an opportunity to sort of influence what was happening at Indy and also keep that element of racing from being a feasible way forward for the drivers and teams. So just real ugly across the board. And again,
the other person too is AJ Foyt. AJ Foyt was on USAC's side, and AJ, you know, being who he was, I mean, that held a lot of influence too.
And to AJ's credit, he definitely held the line for as long as he possibly could. He took his ball and went over to the IRL when the big split in the 90s happened. But, it's people often associate the troubles in IndyCar to the 90s split, to 1996 in particular, when the IRL was formed and Indianapolis got taken off the table completely for CART, and they staged their own race. It was kind of a lot of things coming to fruition from this original situation, the Dan Gurney white paper being a big deal. Dan Gurney wrote a letter sort of laying out his problems and the way forward for all the teams and how they're sort of being shut out of this thing that they have helped build, which, again, it's been the same argument for fucking 50 years now. So
yeah.
And they're still experiencing the fallout from this in IndyCar. You know, some people were – both sides were kind of right. But, yeah, at the end of the day, Pocono definitely got the rough end of this deal. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, there were two different lawsuits attempted by the track, one for $6 million in 1980 or 81, and then a couple years later, because basically what happened was CART banned all of their drivers from running Pocono. And only one driver, what the hell is his name?
Pancho Carter.
I wrote it down. No. It was Danny Ongaya.
Sorry,
yeah. He was the only driver that ran, the kart driver that ran at Pocono, and he won $5,400 in the race and was fined five grand by kart for running that race.
Big $400 check there to take home for running a 500-mile race at Pocono.
Just to kind of not make this too detailed of a story. I mean, there were a lot of different race dates swapped between kart and USAC. AJ Foyt at one point was trying to run a second weekend at Indianapolis with both USAC stock cars and a 250-mile race with the sprint or Indy cars the next day. That didn't happen. After the first Pocono lawsuit, a year or two later, USAC did the same deal again, where like they banned all their kart drivers from showing up. This killed attendance, killed car count. It brought up the aforementioned, like Rob mentioned this before, the infamous race where you had Indy cars running with USAC dirt cars on asphalt.
Yeah. The Van Scully Diamond Mines 500. Look up photos of this shit. It's some of the wildest looking shit you're ever going to see. A multi-class oval race with, you know, Indy cars of the day, not many of them, and then a bunch of Silver Crown cars with no wings, you know, just the little tube sprint cars out there running fucking however fast they went.
So after this second one, Pocono sued for $9 million, and then they settled out of court, and the dollar amount was never told, but they clearly got a few million out of that because it almost shut the track down when that happened. So
another interesting little wrinkle in all of this was there was a point where the Speedway, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, was going to entertain other sanctioning bodies to come in and sanction the race. NASCAR threw their hat in the ring, SECA, of course, and the NHRA, believe it or not, was actually the front runner for a little bit, which is fucking crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, truly insane. That was the most mind-blowing moment in that entire video was reading, because I can't imagine how that would have turned out.
I know, I mean, right? But at the end of the day, of course, USAC, it was a lot of saber rattling, I think, from the part of the Speedway, and USAC did come back in and retain sanctioning well into the 2000s.
Yeah. This whole battle with USAC and Carton, again, how it's continued for years and years and years, it's very messy. If you want the full detailed story, if you haven't watched the video yet, go watch it.
By the way,
it's
this
very
video,
interesting, and I guess...
Sorry to cut you off, but this does bring together two of our favorite YouTubers here, both NASCAR Man and Brock Beard, who's doing the narration, so you know it's well-made. Anytime those guys team up, it's a good show. And if you like what you see here and you want to learn more, there's a whole other four-part series that they do about the split that elaborates even further. So I can't recommend that enough.
As I mentioned before, there was a video put out called People of Talladega, and I don't even know who put this out, but basically it's just a little interview segment of a handful of fans outside the track, not so much inside. So it's a little more PG compared to the other stuff out there, but it's still funny. It's still got its moments. So it starts off with these two interviewers interviewing a handful of dudes, and there's one girl there, and you've got this guy who's very clearly a drunk local. He's not wearing a NASCAR shirt or anything. He's just got these stupid beer goggles on. And the interviewer
literally and figuratively.
Yeah. The interviewer asked him how the beer goggles have been working. He says, I don't know. I haven't had enough beers yet. They ask them who their favorite driver is, and everybody answers Dale Jr., although there is one guy, Danica Patrick fan calls her his girlfriend. Because them what they think Danica, the one says she's hot, and the other guy proceeds friend does 200 an hour does yours, and the other guy doesn't have a girlfriend, so it's not really an issue.
Well, he probably has a cardboard cutout in his home.
Yeah, he's got that.
I call,
Tony
race car drivers your boyfriends or girlfriends.
The best part is when he first says who's your driver, the guy wholeheartedly says we ain't driving. Like, he didn't, the question went over his head.
Like he was 100%. Talking to a state trooper or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So. Which that comes up later on in this video, but we'll get to that. The next subject is a guy that I will say looks like Alabama Steve Irwin, because he's got one of those safari hats on, but he also has 8 beers strapped to his chest on a vest-type contraption. So this next interview
is with a Denny Hamlin fan, and it's from here that the interviewers start a new game with their subjects called the NASCAR Math Game. Adding and subtracting drivers
to get another driver as the total. And this guy, he's got full Denny Hamlin gear on, and the math question, it's like Kevin Harvick minus fucking Tony Stewart or something, and the answer is Denny Hamlin. This guy shows up, and he doesn't have tickets, though. He's the only one they've interviewed so far that actually has NASCAR gear on, and he doesn't have tickets to the race, which is very funny.
a common tale with a lot of NASCAR campers, though. They just kind of show up and lose their shirts, pretty much. Literally.
Now, the next subject is just an older woman who's happy to be there. She's got Tony Stewart gear on from head to toe, and they do the meemaw math question there. Yeah, that's definitely a meemaw. The math question with this woman is Tony Stewart plus Brad Keselowski, and she gives a very gruff and excited answer of Greg Biffle, and it turns out she works for Granger, which is why she gave that answer so quickly.
Nice.
But that was very funny. The next few people that are interviewed are two both women named Amber, and they both have their faces like painted red.
Yeah, they do.
One's got Kyle Busch's
only
number
one
on her
thing
face.
It could be.
One's got Kyle Busch's number on her face. The other one's got Montoya, because that's when this was filmed. Girls don't know math that well and don't know many drivers. And
I love that neither one of them had any racing gear on whatsoever, but had full face paint, like went all in on the face paint.
Yeah.
One girl had a half blackface, so good for her.
Yeah, also not comfortable in the heat. Like, that face paint. My mom, when I was 3, this is way off topic, but when I was 3, my mom decided that I was going to be a clown for Halloween. And she gave me the whole face paint thing. This was in the winter in Colorado. And I can tell you, in the rec room at the Assemblies of God church we went to, I thought I was going to die from that face paint. So I
at
can't
3
even,
years old.
I can't even imagine what it would be like to be out there in that Alabama humidity and all that. So, yeah. Whew. Just buy a t-shirt. Okay. Jesus. I know they're ugly, but come on. Jesus.
Our next subject is a random Canadian guy who, again, not really dressed up in too much NASCAR gear. He's got a Talladega hat, which he probably bought in the parking lot somewhere. Why he's there, no fucking idea. Canada's we'll find out in a second. The interviewer asked the subject who his favorite driver is, and his answer is, it would have a lovely lady in the 10 car. Which is the most incel answer you could give to this question.
Lovely lady. Oh, yeah.
His follow-up statement to that is, if I'm not knowledgeable about the sports, I might as well pick someone gorgeous, which is just the biggest fucking creep. Like, just gross. So gross.
Yeah,
he definitely flew back to Canada with a Danica cardboard cutout.
Yeah, but I guess if that's your criteria, then you don't really have much of a choice. So, you know, because Greg Biffle... cardboard cutout.
Casey Kane.
I was gonna say Casey Kane was out there, so you
true.
Know.
Yeah. I'm sorry, true love.
Yeah. Apology accepted.
Yeah, I didn't mean to insult you there, bud.
So after that little ick fest, we get a more wholesome subject. There's a little kid in a Carl Edwards head to toe Carl Edwards outfit.
I love
and,
this kid.
The kid cannot give an answer as to why he likes Carl Edwards. He's just completely blank when asked that. But when asked if he likes Jeff Gordon, he gives a very excited heck no. So still, plenty of people did not like Jeff Gordon in 2010.
This kid, if you've ever watched the movie Sling Blade, has the exact accent as the kid in that movie. I love him so much.
Wow, he really does.
Yeah, he was spot on.
I had to put that together. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So then afterwards we go back to the drunks. There are two very shithoused kids who are probably early 20s, and immediately we had the one guy worried about getting caught driving drunk to the track. Well, these guys were not worried about that, because they just straight up admitted, my buddy drove hammered, we tried to stop him but we made it, so fuck it. Then they didn't know who was in the race. They were asking if Travis Pastrana guess he drove the week prior. And they got Harvick's number wrong. So,
Harvick, you know, in the 8 car, apparently.
It's probably the... Yeah, Harvick's in the 8 car now. So,
yeah.
And then last up is this random redneck woman
who... Two different Kevin Harvick hats on her. So, really a pretty obvious answer when asked who her favorite driver is. But she gets asked the math question herself. And again, she's asked what 11 and 18, or not, you know, Denny Hamlin and Bobby Labonte. I guess Bobby Labonte, or is it JJ Kyle Busch. No, Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, it should be 29, obviously, and she answers 27 immediately and doubles back and answers 27 again until she realizes, oh, fuck, it's 29.
Who's but driving then, 27? No one. Come yeah, on.
Exactly. Nobody.
Is it Paul Menard at that point? Or is that too early?
I don't know.
You might be right. It might have been Paul Menard.
But her answer on why she could get math was amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, they asked her what she'd been drinking that day, and she said half a Sprite bottle of E&J, which I don't know what that is. I'm assuming some shitty whiskey or something.
Brandy, yeah.
This yep. Mountain Dew bottle, which is even trashier.
Yeah, drinking brandy out of a Mountain Dew bottle.
Yeah.
Mountain Dew bottle of brandy. Five energy shots in this Bud Light. Five energy shots is insane.
Five energy
so many.
Yeah. I thought my Zen habit was bad.
Yeah. She had a real nice smoker's voice, too.
Yeah, of course she did. Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, that pretty much wraps up the video. And that leads us to Talladega this weekend, where Ashley will be hanging out with plenty of people all weekend.
All these people. Every last one of them will be there, and I will be hanging out with them.
If they're still alive.
So maybe like 30% of these people.
Now, this is a dumb question. I forget. Have you been to Talladega before?
Yeah, this will be like my fifth time to Talladega.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
But I am taking Andy, and it's his first time to Talladega, so.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Real quick, too, before we wrap everything up. So the video of the week next week, you know, this so far this season, we've covered a lot of different racing stories and random weird videos, but we've only done one history of monster truck racing video. So we're going to pick that back up this week. We're going to look at the USHRA series, which they were competing with TNT at the time for the premier racing series. So I found a video from 1988 in Worcester, which is where Rob lives as we speak.
That's
right. So, it'll be it's an hour long video with all the commercials, which I'm very excited to see.
Perfect.
See what's on that tape. So that'll be next week's video of the week. And as we mentioned, you know, Ashley will be in Talladega. I hopefully will make it to Fremont. Rob, are you doing any racing stuff this weekend?
No, not a whole lot going on locally that I can get to anyway, but there's plenty of racing happening. By the way, True Love, I don't know what you got going on Saturday night, but the World of Outlaws late models are going to be running at the little dirt track across the street from Talladega. So
yeah. We talked about this last week. We already bought tickets, Rob.
Fuck yeah, that's right.
But it's supposed to rain all fucking weekend, so I'm hoping that the track doesn't get washed out.
It could, yeah. But our friend of the program, Kyle Armstrong, will be there as well on set for the whole weekend, and definitely at the World of Outlaws event, so make sure you go say hi to him.
Yeah, I'll hit him up.
But yeah, that, I'm going to be watching from home this weekend. I think I've spent enough money over the past couple weeks between Thompson and Loudon, and I'm going down to Arkansas. I might get to go see a World of Outlaws race in a couple weeks down there at the beautiful Arrowhead Speedway, but that's still sort of in the planning stages, so we'll see. But for now I'm going to sit at home and drink some beers on my couch.
Yeah, right now it's 80% chance of rain on Sunday, so that's good.
Yeah.
Hopefully you got nothing going on Monday, so.
Yeah, we already cleared out schedule for Monday, so.
God bless you.
good.
I'm hoping it's just like typical southern showers where they just kind of pop up here and there and don't do much, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully, because I mean, I love watching Talladega, and I hate when it's delayed because I hate watching it at work. So hopefully it happens. I guess with that, that'll wrap up this week's trip to Applebee's. As always, you can find us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram and Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens on all the things, and SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com is the shop. Miss Snake Mountain, true love over there. I don't know if she, do you have anything for sale? I named this one.
No, so not really. I have a bunch of Rusty Wallace shirts I need to list, but I haven't done that yet. So
you bringing the trailer down to Talladega? You're gonna set up with all the other gypsy tents?
Yeah. I am gonna pop Andy's gypsy tent cherry this weekend. He's never been to them, man. So
I bet you they're good down there at Talladega.
Yeah, I'll find you a shirt too, Brian.
I was gonna say, yeah, find me because I can't wait another month for Darkton.
Yeah, a large.
A large, yes, I'm a large.
What's the most you're willing to spend on that shirt? Because last time I got
$20.
Well,
what are they charging for it?
Well, 20 is what I paid, but that's because one of our friends was like giving him shots. I think he said regular price was like 30.
Well, see if you can get me that $20 deal. Okay. $30 for that shirt's ridiculous.
Just bring a couple nips of Fireball along with you. Maybe a Mountain Dew bottle full of E&J.
Yeah. There we go.
Fuck yeah. Well, I'm so stoked for you to do that. I've always wanted to go to Talladega, and I look forward to hearing about your exploits down there.
Yeah.
RobMotes_unofficial is me. And real quick, I just want to shout out one more time that GoFundMe for Bobby Moore and family. They've raised a lot of money. They're looking pretty good there, but they can always use more. Natalie just had surgery, and I guess he's doing okay. But they got a long road ahead of them. So if you have some extra money to spare and you haven't spent it on its race day bitch T-shirts, the Moors can definitely use your help. And they wouldn't be upset if you got those too, because you know that's fucking hilarious. But yeah, Bobby's a good guy, and so is Natalie's awesome too, and they really need your help. So I will post that GoFundMe link in the show notes again this week. But yeah, please, if you got anything to spare for them, please do so. But yeah, my band's not doing anything right now, but you can listen to us if you just Google These Wild Planes. We'll pop up everywhere. Yeah. But I have been working on some theme songs for the show on AI.
Boy, has he.
And we'll probably share those next week. We'll pick a good one out. I'm trying to figure out how to put this on the show because it's kind of tough to play audio in here. But
we can't even get our own audio.
Yeah, pretty fed up with our podcast provider. So the audio quality may jump up by a large percentage, or it might get worse. I'm not really sure yet. But again, thanks for bearing with us.
Cool. Well, yeah, I guess with that, that'll wrap up this week's trip to Applebee's. Our check is here. So thanks for joining us, folks, and we'll talk to you again next week.